It's BBC Radio Berkshire. It's Kirsten O'Brien with you today, and it's time to speak to someone from Bracknell who has been named one of the nation's most inspirational businesswomen. Dr. Sarah Bryan has been blind since birth and has dedicated her life's work to health and well-being. She helps midlife women with unresolved pain, and as well as that, squeezes in a bit of mentoring, helping people with sight loss as well in the workplace. And I'm delighted to have you here, Sarah. Hello.
Good morning, Kirsten. Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Congratulations, first off, on the nomination. How did you find out about it?
Thank you. Well, one can actually nominate oneself. And someone I met at a networking Athena meeting just said to me, I run these awards and you should enter. And it was about 2 weeks before the deadline. So I never leave anything until the last minute, except this time. And I lost all my data on the computer at the last minute, and I literally just had to get my husband just get this application in for me, and we got it in, and I wasn't sure what I was expecting, but yeah.
Now you can expect a fancy do in London, can you, in a few weeks' time?
Yeah, on the 30th of September, we're all going to the Hilton at Wembley. And I've even booked a makeup and hair artist who normally does celebs. And I never do that kind of
thing. Oh, I love this. Go big with it. Yes, go big. Superb. So tell me a little bit about what you do on a daily basis.
Yes, so like you said, I work with people with long-term pain. So I'm not interested in sticking plasters and patching people up. And a lot of people I see have had pain for years, decades even. And they've tried a little bit of everything and they're on the painkillers. They've had surgery that may have helped a bit, but they still don't feel like they've been put together quite right. And what I do, what's different is that I've got a whole multidisciplinary team. It's not just me. So when someone comes to me, I look at where they want to get to, what they want to be able to do that they can't do now, and put together their own unique bespoke health project and mobilize the members of my team to help them get there. So everyone has hand-picked therapists and practitioners. There's nobody that works with me that I wouldn't work with myself. Indeed, I do work with many of them myself because we've all got challenges. And yet I'm closely monitoring that team. And then we pick up on, one of us will pick up on something that the other has missed, perhaps, or hasn't thought about. And then we feed that back to another team member. So, for example, one lady whose shoulder pain wasn't getting better, my osteopath came in. He noticed something I hadn't. And I then got the rehab gentleman to change his exercise program, and then we got her out of pain. So many like-minded heads are better than one. And that's also how I work with people with sight loss. It's not just me, it's my wonderful team.
This is really interesting because I talked to you as a woman recently having had an investigation, and I think what I'm left with is adhesions, which some people may well be familiar with. It's where the insides of your body have sort of stuck together if you've had any sort of surgery. And I've joined loads of Facebook groups and I've come to the conclusion that I don't think surgery is another option. So I'm looking at people like you who do this sort of, and from my research, it can come down to the type of things you eat, when you eat, the sort of exercise you do, massaging, and is that all the sort of things that you're talking about?
Yes, it's a little bit more specialised than massaging, but yes, it's about getting people out of pain from all angles. So not just fishing them out of the water, but helping them away from the cliff edge so they don't fall back in the water again, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and do you think that people realise this sort of thing is out there? Because from these groups I've joined, I mean, the medication some people are on for pain, and, you know, when you're in never-ending pain, I can understand why people try to medicate that. But do you think they realise there are potentially these alternatives like you out there?
I think they do, and maybe because most practitioners work alone, so they may have tried something that didn't quite work for them and maybe gave up. I also think it's down to mindset. People are very happy to spend money on their houses, their gardens, their cars, their fancy holidays, and that's wonderful. But because we have an amazing NHS, and I know it's really struggling at the moment, and so people don't think about spending money on their health and well-being. But at the end of the day, you can get another car, but you can't get another body.
Yes. And do you, can you be referred to you through the NHS, or is this a completely private setup?
This is a completely private setup, and you know, I've done a little bit of work with GPs at times and want to do a little bit more of that, but yeah, it is a private setup. Not even, it's more cover even than a private insurance company would offer. They might give you, when I had my hysterectomy, for example, in 2020, so I've been through this myself, I got 10 physio sessions, which was great. When somebody works with me, we agree an amount of time that we think it's going to take, X months or up to a year, and they have unlimited access to me during that time, and then agreed access to the members of my team. So they can see me as many times within that time frame as they need to get what they need to get out of it.
How did you get into this then?
How did I get into helping people out of pain?
Yes.
So I was born into a medical family. My mum was a nurse. My father was a genetic researcher, although he was very, very poorly, so he wasn't around a great deal. And I always just knew that my vocation was something medical, helping people. And yet a lot of the obvious options have their challenges if you can't see. If you can't really be a nurse or a doctor because, you know, looking at wounds and looking at, you know, using speculum and things like that to actually examine people are a bit of a problem. And to be honest, I explored quite a few different options before finding what did work. I had a false start training to be a speech therapist, for example, and worked in speech therapy academia for 10 years. So I'm also a speech scientist by training. And then came to this while I was doing my PhD, really struggling with it and wanting an antidote. And then I founded my business and got my PhD in 2012, and I've been adding to the tool. I've never stopped training. I'm always training in something because you never stop learning. You never should. And so adding to that toolbox, and really there was no job description that fitted me, so I had to create my own niche. And I think everyone does this, but if you live with additional challenges or a disability, you really have to find your own little niche, something that only you can do.
She says, knowing that she's nailing it on a daily basis and up for an award as well. Tell me a little bit then about where you get your drive from for that, because you know, you're saying learning all the time. Most of us get to 11 and we're like, right, I'm happy with that now. But how do you get that level of drive?
Well, I'll be honest, I mean, it's come and gone. So I think I'm naturally just quite a driven person. I want to excel at everything I do. I haven't always felt that way. There was a time when early in the business when I wasn't really making any money. I was loving what I did, but rubbish at running the business. And at that point, I thought, you know what, plenty of people with a visual impairment like myself are on benefits and they are fulfilling their vocation through voluntary work. I'm going to do that. I can't do this anymore. I was defeated and I was depleted. And then I met some business mentors. Well, actually, they emailed me and I listened to a little talk that this chap called Chris Lambert-Gorwin from Heart Center Business did. And it was, it just made sense. And I found myself, long story short, found myself on one of their three-day trainings where they don't just teach you business, but they look into your mindset. And I signed up for 2 years of mentorship, which have now turned into 4 years of mentorship, working with these guys. And they've renewed my energy and drive, and I've learnt the skills to recharge my batteries even when they are running low. So at the moment, we've got two very elderly relatives in our family, both nearing the end of their lives, one more so than the other, and one that's just died 3 weeks ago. I've had a couple of meltdowns over the last couple of weeks. It's been really tough. But at the end of the day, I've spent this morning on the phone. Someone phoned, asked me if I could help someone who was blind with a qualification in massage. Yeah, great, let me talk to them. Talking to my network, various people phoning up wanting me to help them with certain things. And this isn't the stuff that makes me money. This is the stuff that just gets me talking to people, connecting them with the right people so that they get the help. In fact, just before I came into the studio, I was making a note. A family lawyer I've come across wants to be connected with a divorce coach I know. So it's about connecting people, isn't it? And helping them and seeing the outcome.
this is really interesting. Stay there because I want to know lots more about this mentoring that you're doing. I am chatting to Dr. Sarah Bryan, who has been nominated as one of the nation's most inspirational businesswomen. She's been blind since birth and now works extensively in health and well-being, particularly helping midlife women with unresolved pain, and also does mentoring as well with working age people with sight loss. We've been talking lots about all of those things. The one thing I hadn't yet tackled, I suppose, Sarah, is whether your blindness helps you in any way in what you've ended up doing.
Well, it helps my clients because they don't mind taking their clothes off. I had a lady once say to me, I don't mind it's you because you can't see my big fat tummy. And of course, I'm going to be working on her tummy, but the fact that I couldn't see her made her feel safer and more comfortable.
That is incredible. I hadn't even thought about that. That is incredible. And growing up, was your approach to your sight loss just to do as much as you could uninterrupted? You know, what was your mindset growing up?
I think it took me some years to actually realise that there was something different. Like my family members, I remember when I was very small, they'd be looking at photos and I'd be sort of holding my hand out going, Mummy, can I feel? Or can I look? And she's like, no, because you can't see. And I couldn't quite work out what this thing was that adults could do that I couldn't. Until I was up to something naughty and suddenly someone's going, I'm watching you, Sarah. And you're thinking, hang on a minute, you're nowhere near me. Ah, okay, somehow they know what I'm doing without being in physical contact. And I guess to me that's what seeing was. And then, not unreasonably, I went to a school with other visually impaired children, so I thought, well, children are blind, adults can see. I'll learn to do that when I grow up. Not unreasonable. And then I suppose just with more knowledge and understanding over time, did I do everything uninterrupted? I wasn't very mobile. I was born with 60% muscle tone, and actually I was never supposed to be able to walk. I had my feet up around my ankles, like a serious club foot, similar to club foot anyway. And yet I was never supposed to be able to walk. I had a lot of physio, and I guess there were the can-do people and the can't-do people, but my parents were very much can-do. And I think also I've got a sister who has the same condition as me, but she has severe learning difficulties, and well, she's been diagnosed as autistic. So her needs relative to mine always put me into some sort of perspective, not just for me, but for the family, because actually I was the able-bodied child, whereas Rachel had so many more problems. So I think that was a unique situation, really.
So you've established this brilliant business, and I mentioned you're also mentoring working-age people with sight loss as well. Mm-hmm. You find time for that in all of this as well?
Well, yeah, that was during... I still do it. That started during the lockdown when people like myself, unless you were a physiotherapist or considered necessary, I do consider what I do necessary, but anyway, we weren't allowed to see clients hands-on, face-to-face. And so a lot of my colleagues started advising on posture and movement and things via Zoom. And I tried this and I thought, this is no good. I can't see people. I can hear them, but it's not enough. And so then my business mentor said to me, okay, if you really can't do that, then who can you serve? And the answer was obvious. So I've now mentored three people, very different people, with sight loss. And it's going very well, and I'll continue to do that. And I can do that from the comfort of my own home, garden, and still bring the team in. So it's just another string.
It absolutely is. So we mentioned you've got the awards ceremony taking place in London on the 30th of September. All the best with that. What's the name of the clinic that you run?
Well, I don't run it, but I work at Thiel Wellbeing Centre, and I think they're listening now. Hi, Claire. Hi, Christine. Anyone who's listening, they are fantastic. We've got a wide range of services all under one roof. Some of them work in my team, others not, but it does mean that whatever anyone presents with, I can send them in the right direction and often collaborate or just refer on to another practitioner. So it's important. The important thing to me is not that I work with everybody that I speak to, but that they are sent to the right person for them. So yeah, Thiel Wellbeing Centre, great, friendly, professional, wonderful place to work.
Superb stuff. And I can't let you go without your car boot story, because I'm talking about car boot sales today and you've come in going, oh, hang on, I've got a tale. What's your story?
Well, as I mentioned, I went to a school for the blind, and it was a boarding school. And one of our house mothers, actually, she was very enterprising. She got us all out and doing stuff, including a car boot sale. And this unfortunate lady, she'd just bought a Cardi from Marks & Spencer's for £25. And it was getting rather warm, and she was a bit hot and bothered. So she took off her cardigan, folded it neatly, put it down on the table, and somebody sold it for 10p.
Them's the risks you take, aren't they? Oh, it's been really good chatting to you. Really hope the awards go well. And yeah, I mean, what you've achieved already is inspirational in itself. Thank you very much for coming in and talking to me.
Thank you. Is it worth giving my details in case anyone who's listening wants to speak to me? Would that be appropriate? Or is it best that they ring the studio?
Yes, if they get in touch with us here at BBC Radio Berkshire, and the lovely Sam is there and can pass things on.
That on. That's great. Thank you so much.